For people who suffer from chronic pain, which lasts for weeks, months, or even years, the medications often prescribed come with side effects, the risk of addiction, and even overdose. And our guest physician this hour says those painkillers don't necessarily get rid of the pain. They can even lead to more pain. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 9th. We will discuss his approach to dealing with chronic pain that does not involve prescription painkillers. He calls it a holistic approach involving the physical and mental aspects of pain. Would you or a loved one benefit from his plan? What is it like living with chronic pain or a dependence on painkillers? Have you found a way to cope? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Mel Pohl, a board-certified family physician who specializes in treating chronic pain and related addiction. He is the medical director of the Las Vegas Recovery Center, and he is the author of The Pain Antidote, the proven program to help you stop suffering from chronic pain, avoid addiction to painkillers, and reclaim your life. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
And thank you so much for joining us extra early in the morning. It's 10 minutes after 4 o'clock in Las Vegas now.
I'm well aware of that, but I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know what? I feel your pain, so to speak. speaking of pain, how big a problem is chronic pain in this country?
It's a growing problem, Joy. It is the number one reason people go to the doctor. Is some painful condition. There's over 125 million Americans suffering from chronic pain, and that's pain that lasts more than 3 to 6 months. So it's really a prevalent issue, and as our population ages, it becomes more and more significant.
Yeah, and various, places, but oh, my aching back is one of them.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, certainly the spine. From an evolutionary standpoint, we can talk about evolution in Wisconsin, right?
Sure, why not?
we weren't really meant to stand up. So by standing up, we've changed the dynamics related to gravity. And, we walk on this earth and we jolt our joints, our knees and our ankles. And so spinal disease and musculoskeletal disease is really becoming more and more prevalent in the respect that our spines degenerate as we age, and degenerative tissue causes us to feel uncomfortable.
So we go to the doctor, and we hurt, for a long time. Let's talk a little bit about that. This is not just ouch. This can be really, really awful pain.
Of course. Well, there's a couple of ways to look at this. The one point that I cover with my co-author Kathy Ketchum in the book very clearly is that certain people feel more pain than others, mm-hmm. and it's related to a constitution and a cultural approach to pain, but also to genetic factors. So certain people are born more sensitive to pain than others, and lastly, we know that people who've experienced trauma, physical, emotional, sexual trauma. Our vets coming back from the war have been injured or have seen things that have injured their brain, and people with those injuries have more pain compared to other people who really sort of take it on the chin and don't suffer as much.
And often, maybe too often, the prescription is a painkiller.
Well, if I'm in my family practice, and you come in with a complaint, I am looking for something to do for you. That is my goal. That's the way, certainly in Western medicine, we physicians are trained. And there are a number of choices for how to approach chronic pain, but if the pain is going on for 3 to 6 months and you're showing up month after month, and ibuprofen or naproxen or other anti-inflammatory medicines isn't doing what needs to be done, then the logical next step is for the physician to prescribe an opioid. And opioids are, of course, narcotics that have a tendency to develop tolerance and dependence and cause a whole host of problems that is the focus of the book.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about those. So what are the problems associated with opioid addiction?
Yeah, now first let me differentiate that we're not only talking about addiction. Addiction's maybe 10 or 15% of people who are exposed to these drugs pathologically pursue them and go to the street and go to five or six physicians. That's a big problem, and that occurs over the course of time in certain people who have, we could call it a vulnerability to developing addiction. But I'm equally concerned about the other 60 to 70% of patients who get exposed to these medications, and over time they develop side effects like constipation and problems thinking and falling down, coordination problems and problems with the immune systems and problem with the hormone system, sleep apnea. I mean, there's a lot of things that opioids on a chronic basis tend to do to the person's nervous system. But really the key that I believe your listeners need to know is that people who take opioids long-term rarely have significant long-term benefit. The benefits diminish, the problems and side effects tend to increase, and the net effect is that people have more pain on the drugs than they would off the drugs.
In essence, are we you develop a dependence then to the opioid, and it doesn't necessarily take care of the pain?
That's correct. And we actually talk about this to differentiate, because you know the label of addict is one that doesn't apply to many people who continuously have problems with opioids. I see a lot of patients in Las Vegas at the center where I work, and these folks come in and they are taking their medicines as prescribed. Because of the nature of the medication, the dose has increased over time. And really the key here is that they're not making, the drugs are not causing the patient to have a better life. In fact, their life is diminished. Now, I just want to back up and say that there are people who take an occasional dose of an opioid or take a very controlled low dose of opioid over the course of many, many years, and it makes them better. In other words, it helps them get up and go and participate with their family and even go to work. That's not the population that we're talking about in the book. We're talking about people who continue to take the medicine and over time, instead of getting better, are getting worse.
Yeah. And it can get really bad. Says here that opioid overdoses kill more people than car accidents, cocaine, and heroin addictions combined.
Yes. And that's a new development over the last 5 years. Over 40 people an hour die from drug overdoses, about 16,000 last year. About 12 million people are on daily doses of opioids. And again, most of these are prescribed by doctors. They're for treatment of chronic pain conditions. However, inadvertently, people take their medication. They take a repeat dose because they're still in pain, and before they know it, they've taken an overdose and they don't wake up.
Yeah. Well, you yourself live with chronic pain. How does that affect your life?
I've done this work. Probably about 12 years ago, I had a very, very minor back injury that resulted in some aching, and it turned out that I have a bulging disc on the left side of my lower back. It's there 99% of the time, and what I found is that it doesn't impair my function. I mean, I get to do whole lots of things like exercise and swim and hike and ride bikes. And after a while, you know, if I'm hiking more than a mile, it'll start to ache. And really what I found and what I cover in the book is that my response to the pain, the fact that if I can get a handle on my consternation and my frustration and my annoyance with this phenomenon and just sort of say, yeah, my back's tight right at the moment, and I have some intervention measures like stretching and taking deep breaths and particular exercises that really, in the moment, will help. It's just, you know, it's just kind of part of the aging body that I live in.
Yeah, we will. We're going to check news, and then when we come back, we'll talk about how emotions can drive the experience of pain, and more of the mental aspects of chronic pain, and we'll talk more about the antidote, the pain antidote, the program that can help you stop suffering from chronic pain, avoid addiction to painkillers, and reclaim your life. Our guest is the author of this book, Dr. Mel Pohl. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question or an experience to share. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Dr. Mel Pohl, who is a board-certified family physician who specializes in treating chronic pain and related addiction. He is the medical director of the Las Vegas Recovery Center and author, co-author, actually, of The Pain Antidote, the proven program to help you stop suffering from chronic pain, avoid addiction to painkillers, and reclaim your life. So how do we do that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'd love to hear from you. If you or a loved one live with chronic pain, we'd like to know how you deal with it, whether you've ever had to take drugs for the pain or even battled addiction. And we'll wonder if you have found another way to cope and what you think of our guest's plan. So, Dr. Pohl, you were describing your own chronic pain just before the news break. You have a bulging disc in your back, and it hurts from time to time after you hike too much. But you're not taking a narcotic opioid to deal with it. How are you dealing with it?
Good question. I've never taken narcotic painkillers from my back, and I'm sure that's because I'm an educated consumer, and I'm also a man in long-term recovery from drug addiction, so they just really weren't an option. But I have a pretty steady regimen of physical interventions. I stretch every day, and I have a series of exercises that I actually learned over 10 years ago from a physical therapist. I do yoga on a regular basis. I meditate on a regular basis. And on occasion, I'll take a couple of ibuprofen or maybe lie on an ice pack if it's really bad. I try and get massages regularly. Have done some acupuncture over the years. And you know, probably the biggest thing I do is that I don't allow my mind to create stories. You know, we all have a narrative about things that happen to us. And if the narrative is negative, that the impact of that negative narrative really makes the experience of the pain worse. And yeah, that's what we were talking about before the break, is that emotions and thoughts really drive the experience of chronic pain.
How so? I mean, so if you're saying, oh, poor me, and I, or, you know, things along those lines?
Certainly focusing on the pain with self-pity is an unhealthy mechanism that some people engage in. It's pretty normal human behavior to have an experience and either make it worse or make it better in our own minds. So, for example, the unhealthy way to approach it, or let's say the unskillful way to approach it, is, oh my back is hurting, it's early in the morning, what's it going to be like at noon, I have to work all day, I'm not going to be able to take care of my responsibilities, and then I want to go out to dinner tonight, and my life is terrible, as opposed to, my back's pretty tight right about now, I'm going to go lie down and get some stretching done, and then I'm going to do my meditative practice, and I'm going to call my massage therapist and see if I can get in to see her tonight instead of wait till the weekend. Yeah. Different energy level, different set of Well, I mean, if you looked at my brain scan when I gave those two scenarios, we would see substantially different responses in the area that pain is experienced. And that's really where we get the tie-in between the physically or physiologically significant experience of emotions driving pain with and the three emotions that really are key are anxiety, anger, and fear. If I feel my back and I say, darn it, wow, I can't believe this is going on, it's a totally different experience than if I say, you know, hello, yeah. I recognize you, and it just isn't, it doesn't have to ruin my whole day.
So is that to say the pain really is in our head?
Well, that's a great question. I actually had a patient that I was working with who had chronic headaches, very intractable migraine headaches, and we had this conversation that that the pain is real, and that emotions drive the experience of pain. It's two of the basic principles in the book. And she looked at me and turned red in the face, and she said, are you telling me my pain is in my head? And I took a moment, and I said, well, you have headaches, so of course it's in your head.
Right.
But the implication, and this is a cultural issue, Joy, and it's a big problem, is that it's either real or it's in your head, emotional. And I'm here to tell you that emotions and the thoughts that drive our emotions are real physiological phenomena that are related to the way the cells communicate, the way neurotransmitters circulate in our brain. There are feedback loops that generate either higher or lower levels of pain, depending on what we think. And that tie-in, you know, the mind-body connection, is absolutely critical for managing this condition.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Dr. Mel Pohl, author of The Pain Antidote. And our first caller for him is Dan in La Crosse. Hello, Dan.
Hello. Good
morning. Yes, tell us your story, Dan.
I've done menial labor all my life. And I've had the normal back pain, leg pain, shoulder pain, knee pain, whatever. I had an incident where I had a knee replaced, and between surgery, diabetes, whatever, the knee surgery worked out, but I had some problems that were down in my foot.
Yeah, and Dan, I don't mean to rush you, but okay. You had a lot going on. Then what?
Okay, they've tried all sorts of stuff. I had better insurance when this first started. I could get acupuncture, did all the therapies, all that stuff. Didn't make a difference. They put me on hydrocodone and methadone. They give me, they said from a 10 count, I went down to about a 6 or 7 count.
Yeah, so you're still in pain after all of this.
Yes, after the doctor I had, he retired. They put me to a different doctor. This doctor, I don't know if I'd call him a bigot, but
well,
first time in his office, he said, if you're looking for drugs, find a different doctor.
Yeah. Well, that happens because some people do doctor shop. I understand Dr. Pohl, but Dan, you know, has a lot of different physical ailments, and says that he's been in tremendous pain, still is in tremendous pain. Tried some, you know, alternatives like acupuncture and the like. What is someone like Dan to do?
Well, and thanks for calling, Dan. I mean, he really is representative of that 60% of patients that I was alluding to. So, you know, we're not really talking about frank drug addiction. He's not shooting heroin in between his doses of prescribed medications. But Dan struggles with some of the same difficulties that millions of Americans do, which is that it's harder and harder to get these medications by prescription. And the reason is not that we want you to suffer more or that we want you to have a worse life. And, you know, we don't really have time to spend, and I don't want to get too personal, but if the medications are making life better and enabling you to do things that you want to do, then that is a reasonable course of action. 80% of the time, overall, a combination like methadone and hydrocodone are very, very potent. They're, you know, the, depending on the dosage, they really can have substantial side effects, the way I talked about in the earlier part of the hour. And the, you know...
And we lost our guest. Our telephones sometimes do that, so we will call Dr. Pohl back, and we will take more of your questions and your experiences for him. We're talking about how to deal with, how to cope with, how to stop suffering from chronic pain without prescription painkillers. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And Dr. Pohl, I apologize. We have that happen every once in a while.
I thought you didn't like what I was saying.
No, not at all. But you were saying that that Dan's story was... representative of this dependence on narcotic painkillers that we were talking about earlier in the hour.
Yes, and what I was beginning to say was that, in fact, the levels of medication, hydrocodone in combination with methadone, in my clinical experience, often drive the pain level up. And though, he got some moderate relief when he first started the medications, I would really question if that relief is sustained, which it tends not to be because of tolerance, and if he wouldn't do better without medication and really sort of very diligently practice some of the measures that we've been talking about related to thoughts and feelings related to pain. Not an easy task, but that's really why we wrote the book.
Yeah. Let's go to Dan now in Arcadia. Hello, Dan.
Hi. My wife has been dealing with chronic pain for close to 20 years. She has what's called avascular necrosis, it's bone death, and the pain is on a level with bone cancer pain. And she's been on OxyContin, for a while it was up to 780s a day, and it was actually helping her. She was actually functioning, because we have 9 kids, and she was functioning and doing fine, but now they've decided that for some reason they're reducing her. She's had both her hips replaced. And before the opioids, she went to the Sister Kenny Pain Clinic in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. where they take you off everything and they teach you have acupuncture, teach you biofeedback and everything. And their recommendation when she was done was to go to the Western Wisconsin Pain Clinic in Eau Claire and get on opioids.
Yes. I think that your wife is in the 20% of the exceptions who really benefit from being on a drug like OxyContin. The dose of OxyContin, if it's truly 8 or 7 80 milligram pills, is well over the threshold of dose where we see potential complications and overdose deaths. Over 100 milligram equivalents of morphine a day, we see an 11-fold increase in the risk of overdose death. So I suspect that's the motivation of the prescribers. It's a real rock and a hard place. I mean, if the truth is that on that rather high dose of opioids, her life is better, then her prescribing doctor really has the challenge. We speak mostly of people whose life is not better, who in fact withdraw from their family and are tired most of the time and don't sleep well at night and appetite goes down and they just... They retreat from life. That is the typical story of people on chronic opioids. And for those people, one of the potential solutions is coming off opioids. In your wife's case, she's tried it and it made her life worse. So it really it underscores the difficult and complex nature of these multiple conditions.
Thank you, Dan, for the call. And good luck in the future. Let's talk a little bit. We talked some of dealing with our emotions, but another part of your plan is that physical activity is important for chronic pain sufferers, which is, I know, something they often avoid from personal experience or family experience. If it hurts when you walk and move, you tend to not want to do that. What makes the physical activity so important?
Well, describe the situation very clearly. It hurts when I do this, so I don't do this. As a result of not doing this, then things stop working very well. So if it's walking or moving my shoulder with a rotator cuff, the less I move, the tighter the tissue gets that defines the joint. And the tighter the tissue is, the more pain when I move. So unless you're going to go into a cocoon and not move at all, staying in bed 20 hours out of the day the way some of our patients end up, you have to move in the world, and in fact increasing mobility even though it hurts, you know, at the edge of the discomfort and stretching and straining the joints actually increases circulation, takes some of the toxins away, increases mobility, and overall enhances the experience of life, which decreases pain. Now, all of that is very challenging. The default for many people is I'm just going to lie down, and that is actually the worst thing to do for somebody with chronic pain, is to lie down and become immobilized. So we really look to differentiate hurt, which it may be therapeutic, from harm, which is damaging the tissue. And a skilled therapist really ought to be consulted before an exercise regimen is undertaken. But in the book, we really try and help people who don't have access to professionals. And, you know, taking a very short walk, even if it's across the house to get started, is a good way to begin to get oxygen into the lungs and into the tissues, and then going out to the mailbox, and then going halfway around the corner, and then eventually starting to walk around the corner. Those behaviors improve quality of life and decrease pain.
And when you should lie down is when it's time for bed, time for sleep. Good sleep is important, you say. How can chronic pain sufferers get better sleep?
It's very challenging. At the Las Vegas Recovery Center, one of the things is restoring natural sleep cycle, because sleep is distorted by the drugs. So if we're talking about people who are on opioids, like we've been talking about this morning, or on sleeping medications, sedative medications, that those drugs distort the normal sleep architecture. So it can take weeks to months for that to start coming back. There are some areas of sleep hygiene that we discuss in the book, which is basically going to bed at the same time, sleeping in a darkened room, don't watch TV, avoid caffeine. I mean, I can't tell you how many people say, you know, I cut off my Diet Cokes at 8 p.m. Why can't I sleep?
Right. You know, so, we only have a couple of minutes before a news break. Can you tell us why sleep reduces pain?
Well, getting good rest allows the tissues to restore, so it does have a restorative function. So there's just absolutely no question that when we turn the brain down and allow it to process and the body to sort of consolidate its gains, if you will, I mean, that is the function of sleep. The net effect is that there is a healing that takes place, which is interfered with if you don't sleep. So sleep is really critical.
We are talking with Dr. Mel Pohl. He is a family physician, a board-certified family physician who specializes in treating chronic pain and related addiction. He's the medical director of the Las Vegas Recovery Center, and he is co-author of a book that describes the plan they use at the Las Vegas Recovery Center. The book is called The Pain Antidote, the proven program to help you stop suffering from chronic pain, avoid addiction to painkillers, and reclaim your life. And we're talking about how we would do just that. And welcoming your questions and your stories, your experiences, whether you or a loved one live with chronic pain, or maybe you've overcome it, maybe you are living with it without painkillers. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back to take more of your calls about chronic pain. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Can we overcome chronic pain, or at least the suffering from chronic pain, without prescription painkillers? We are talking with a guest expert who says yes, we can, and he helps patients do that at the Las Vegas Recovery Center, and he has written about it in The Pain Antidote, the proven program to help you stop suffering from chronic pain, avoid addiction to painkillers, and reclaim your life. His name is Dr. Mel Pohl, and if you have a question for him, or if you have a story about your own chronic pain or the chronic pain of a loved one that you would like to share, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Or if you have a question about this new treatment or different way to approach chronic pain, we welcome that as well. Dr. Pohl, we had a caller who couldn't stay through the news who wanted to talk about her rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And she said she, though, has not been on pain medication, she believes, because she uses good nutrition. What role does nutrition play in reducing pain?
It's a great question. I mean, we're really talking about, the body is the engine. The fuel that you put in it is going to have a critical impact on how well you feel and how well it functions. So there are foods that really fight pain. They have an anti-inflammatory effect, starting with water, drinking at least 8 to 10 ounces of water per day, 8 ounce glasses of water per day hydrates, helps the kidneys flush out toxins and increases the fluid content of the joints. There are healthy foods that decrease pain, and we're talking about certain fruits like cranberries and blueberries and red grapes and tart cherries. Walnuts are actually pain reducing. There are powerhouse vegetables, green things like watercress and kale, which is everybody's favorite, and broccoli and arugula, and oily fishes that tend to add omega-3 nutrients and reduce inflammation. On the other side of that are the toxic chemicals that we ingest, and we can start with sugar and grains that turn into sugar. Certainly people who smoke cigarettes and who drink high doses of stimulants like caffeine or other energy drinks aren't doing themselves any good. And one of the things Kathy, my co-author, learned when she was researching this topic is that nightshade vegetables, so these are the vegetables like tomatoes, potatoes, and eggplant, seem to trigger arthritis and make pain worse. Mm-hmm. Fried foods are not very healthy. Aspartame and other kinds of food additives don't lend itself to positive energetic states. And, if you're able, using organic products really does improve the health and nutrient status of your body.
Yeah, the book even includes pain-reducing recipes that I'm going to make, even though I'm not I do not suffer from from chronic pain. So
I have a good friend who said she's going out and buying a slow cooker, because a lot of what we talk about in the book is prepared in slow cookers or crock pots.
Yeah. We got a Facebook comment from a listener who says, doctors claim there isn't a problem with providing adequate pain management in America. They say that because half the time they simply deny that you're in pain. Weed helps.
Hmm. Oh, gee. Well, yeah. Marijuana is certainly in the headlines all over the country. I'll make a few brief comments. I mean, there is no such thing as medical marijuana. The efforts around the country are really to legalize another mood-altering substance so that we can have it alongside of alcohol. Do I think this is a good thing as an addiction specialist? Absolutely not. To let young people be exposed early to the effects of marijuana, cannabis, and its byproducts is, I think, that the newest disaster in our culture. Now, that said, there are components of cannabis CBD particularly comes in an oil that can be extracted, don't have mood-altering effects, and have all sorts of at least alleged or suspected benefits for people with pain, for people with seizure disorders, for people with a variety of different conditions, and should be studied. And I'm all in favor of allowing medical system, even though it's a flawed system, to really study those products and bring them to market. But you don't buy medication in a drug dispensary, you know, with teenagers who are trained to dispense, you know, all breeds of very, very, very potent marijuana that are ruining people's brains. So I'm not a fan of medical marijuana. I don't think that truly medical marijuana exists. If we could isolate the active ingredients and have those available, I think they'd be great in the armamentarium of chronic pain, especially if they didn't alter the mood.
Yeah. Any comment on, I think Brad was also saying that doctors don't take pain seriously.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. I mean, we talk a lot about this in the book because I think the medical system has failed people with chronic pain, and I think we start by not believing our patients. So, you know, the first premise that we elucidate is that all pain is real, and that a substantial percentage of the overall experience of pain is in the part of the brain that we talked about earlier, the thoughts and the feelings. That doesn't make it any less real. Why would it be less real if it's based in fear and anxiety? I mean, those are real neurophysiological phenomena. And unfortunately, we in Western medicine are not trained to deal with people holistically. We're not trained to really spend the kind of time that we need, and we don't even have the kind of time that we need. I mean, I have the luxury at Las Vegas Recovery Center of really getting to work with people and just sitting and listening. And so often, they're chronically misunderstood and displaced in their ability to get caring, the true caring that is, I think, the essence of pain treatment.
Mary Kay on Facebook says, the doctor's methods are an excellent and, in fact, realistic way to approach chronic pain. However, many of the more natural ways of treatment, such as massage and acupuncture, are expensive and therefore not available to many. In our country, the answer to every pain, supposed or real, is to drug it up. The insurance companies and big pharma control our choices because they control the accessibility for many due to the high cost of quality of life.
Well said, Mary Kay. I couldn't have said it better myself. One of the reasons Kathy and I wrote the book was because so many people can't access the more costly treatment. So massage, it can be expensive, although there are massage schools where you can go and get a discounted massage or certain disability centers where people who are disabled can have access to a free massage from people who are in training, for example. But a lot of what we talk about in the book for that very reason isn't costly. So starting with the breath. I mean, the effect of mindfulness meditation practice is absolutely proven meditation, and that is sitting for a period of time, noticing what comes up in your brain and your body without judgment, and then applying very, very simple techniques. And, you know, if you can go out and buy a CD, Jon Kabat-Zinn, Z-I-N-N, has a wonderful CD about chronic pain, and he has a process called the body scan that we teach in the book and also at the center. And it's really just traveling through the body and allowing yourself to notice what's there without trying to change anything. And just the settling down effect has a pain-reducing effect. Now, it may be 5 or 10%. Well, truthfully, the effect of drugs is no more than 10 or 20%. So we're halfway there just by using our breath. And then lastly, we talked about exercise and movement and stretching. I mean, these things can be taught and learned and then self-applied. We actually teach people how to do acupressure. So there are certain points that you can actually use your fingers to stimulate that, you know, it's not a professional acupuncturist, but it really does have a positive effect on chronic pain.
So tell us about the positive effect that all of this has, your pain antidote has on people. Can you give us an example of someone that it's worked for?
Oh hundreds of people come to mind, and we write about a lot of them in the book. I guess one of my favorites is a physician colleague of mine who came in with cervical spine disc disease. He'd had surgery. He was on a fentanyl patch, which is a very potent long-term opioid, and he was on oral medication to break up the pain in between. And I just saw him. He's 2 years off medications. He's actually teaching this kind of work to his patients. He is a family doc. He's active in his medical society. And, you know, I said, so how's your pain? He said, I don't have pain. I have strong sensations in my neck from time to time. They're always worse when I'm stressed. I use my breath, and he happens to have resonated with one of the things that we recommend in the book, which is 12-step recovery, and he identifies that he had addiction when he first came to treatment. But, I mean, he came to visit me just last week, and he spoke to our patients, and he just texted me yesterday, and he said, you know, you better tell these people how bad I was, because they see me now, and they can't imagine that I was as bad as they are now. So the transformation is so dramatic, Joy, that you couldn't imagine that it was that bad. And I remember him when he came into treatment, and he really was on the verge of giving up.
We have less than a minute. What last words might you have for chronic pain sufferers who may feel hopeless that it's never going to get better?
Well, I guess the best message I can say is give up the hope that it's going to get better and get to work on helping yourself deal with what is, and not trying to change it, but just allow yourself to experience it without turmoil and fighting against it. And what you'll end up finding is that the pain reduces in that process.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Joy.
Dr. Mel Pohl is co-author of The Pain Antidote, the proven program to help you stop suffering from chronic pain, avoid addiction to painkillers, and reclaim your life. Thank you to Christy Taylor and to Caleb Lado for producing and directing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.